What kind of fun is waiting for you at King's Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at King's Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. King's Island is now open weekends.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Everybody, welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I'm Patrick Daugherty, joined as always by Mr. Craig Dennis Carter. We're going to break down the big changes in the Seahawks backfield, the Rams' continued struggles, whether Taysom Hill and Geno Smith are well and truly for real. One thing we're not going to talk about, Denny, is you falling down your stairs and almost dying on Sunday, because I put that out there as like a topic, and that I didn't want to talk about how we were just decrepit old men.
No, right. We decided against talking about how I slipped on my daughter's jacket, which was on the side of the stairs, and went tumbling down the stairs and spilled my plate of eggs, somehow held onto my laptop, but thought that I had broken, I don't know, 3 to 5 bones. This is something we will not talk about on the show.
We will not talk about how you're podcasting in a flak jacket, excuse me. I had not heard the eggs portion. That really adds a dimension to it. So it's food and a laptop.
I was covered in eggs. Next thing I know, my dog is on top of me eating the eggs.
So you were laying there kind of just like dying for a little bit. Like yep. The vultures were coming in.
Yeah.
Your dog's like, you've been a good master. But yeah.
Another thing I won't talk about is when you hit your funny bone hard enough, and this is off limits. We're not going to talk about it, but when you hit your funny bone hard enough, the feeling leaves your entire lower arm. I mean, like completely, totally numb for many, many minutes, and you think, oh God, I've lost functioning in my left hand.
That's your blurbing arm. I mean, we would have had to immediately fire you. I mean, I know you may think that NBC is like, you can't fire someone who's suffered an accident, but that is actually not part of your employment agreement. You have a special one.
I told my wife, please help me up. Yeah. I'll be fired if I'm not up in 15 seconds.
You would have been gone, and you would be like, yeah, Pat refers to me as Tiny Tim at work, and he always says he's gonna fire me. And it's really like a lot of harassment.
That's right.
And but yeah, we're not going to talk about it. Like, kids, keep the stuff off the stairs.
Please.
Like, what is the deal with this?
Please.
Off the stairs. And, you know, the stairs get all the attention for, like, where to not put stuff. Don't put stuff, like, right in front of the door. Like, when I come in my garage door, there's always, like, a boot or something there. Right. And I almost die, like, every single time.
You know what I love? The kids take off their shoes in a way that it looks like they have been abducted by aliens out of their shoes, where, you know, I open the front door and it's just two pairs of shoes sitting there perfectly aligned with each other. Right. But no children. And it's right in the way. And I'm thinking, oh God, they've been abducted, but no, they just put their, they just put their shoes there.
Yeah. They've been beamed directly out of their shoes, but yeah, man, the stairs are just the death trap. Over the age of 35, did you know that according to the CDC, if you're over the age of 35, you have a 1 in 5 chance of dying on the stairs any given day?
And don't make me laugh, man. My ribs.
My ribs. We will make sure this is a very grim, serious podcast, which is why we will begin with the grim, serious Matt Rhule, who actually he like wanted to be a football guy. But then by the end, he was like the guy who was like citing like Jay-Z in press conferences as he was like desperately just like putting out gambits for time. Matt Rhule has been fired after going 11-27 in 2+ years as Panthers head coach. The single most stunning football statistic I've maybe ever seen, Denny, from ESPN Stats and Info, was that the Panthers went 1-27 when allowing 17 plus points under Matt Rule, like, including 25 losses in a row. I mean, allowing 17 points should not be a death sentence.
That's what it is. No, he's literally, I joke about coaches like Mike Tomlin who are like, basically, if we give up 20 points, we don't deserve to win. But Matt Rule actually abided by that.
Which, he did.
You got to hand it to him, I think. And he said, look, if they score 21, it's over. Like, we don't deserve to win. And they never did win. Here's the funny thing. I remember when Matt Rule was hired, and he, like Mike McCarthy, when McCarthy was hired by Dallas, sold himself as the analytics guy. And he couldn't have coached in a more drastically different way than an analytics guy.
No, he clearly just read a few Athletic articles that said, like, new Panthers owner David Tepper is into analytics.
Yeah.
Matt Rule's like, well, this can't be that hard. Like,
right.
Again, he didn't even subscribe to PFF. He just accessed the really free basic stuff that you only need an email to get on Football Outsiders. And then he said he was into analytics.
Yeah. He was like, have you ever heard of adjusted completion rate?
Yeah. And he's like, I've only heard of it. I haven't looked into it yet, obviously. Yeah.
While we're talking about Matt Rule and everything, David Tepper seems like a guy who makes rash decisions, maybe not completely analytically based himself. Here's a quote from when when David Tepper, the owner of the Carolina Panthers, hired Matt Rule. He said, quote, he dresses like expletive and sweats all over himself. Hmm. He dresses like me, so I have to love the guy, Tepper said. I was a short order cook. He was a short order cook.
Short order cook's famously sweaty. It is hot in the kitchen.
It is. And nobody gave him anything. Nobody gave me anything, the billionaire said to the press. So, yeah, I mean, just tremendous process there that they both were short order cooks at one point in their lives. So you get the job.
It may need a more rigorous process this time. Perhaps someone comes in with some slides about Brandon Staley and just like, I wouldn't have done this. And even that counts as more analytics than really what Matt Rule did.
Yeah,
because like you said, just seemingly, I mean, he hired the analytics god, Joe Brady, as his offensive coordinator.
Right.
And then was like the first guy who tossed overboard. They actually installed a plank at whatever bank the Panther Stadium is named after now and made Joe Brady walk it.
That's
very
right.
Not very unanalytical.
And what's a little bit on the tragic side about this is that Ben McAdoo, the offensive coordinator in his first year in Carolina, he has tried to put Baker Mayfield and this offense in a position to succeed. And what I mean by that is lots of passing on early downs, downfield concepts that are trying to move the ball. Okay. Like they're not doing like the Joe Judge thing where they're only going to pass on third and eight. Okay. They really, really tried to implement a QB friendly approach here, and it failed utterly because they don't have the talent.
Ben McAdoo is a testament to this being in the wrong place at the wrong time in the NFL. Or Ben McAdoo, I've long called a visionary because he was one who benched Eli Manning the first time.
Yes.
And then they came around, like basically made the entire like city of New York apologize to Eli for the benching. And then Ben McAdoo never recovered from having to play Eli Manning again. And he just keeps getting set up in the worst possible situations. And I mean, is there any post Matt Rule hope for the Panthers this season? Looking going forward, you know, they'll probably get a clean slate, maybe even a new GM, new front office structure. Is there any 2022 hope? Like if you've been rostering DJ Moore and watching him descend into a wide receiver 4 or 5, or is it just wait till next year?
I'd like to think that there's some hope now that the Wicked Witch is gone, that they can, implement some sort of productive offense or at least an aggressive offense. I'm just spitballing here, but I mean, McAdoo has, and he's still there, and maybe McAdoo will be able to like go all out with whatever approach he wants to implement. I will say that the fourth down decision making has been horrendous, and that could change. Also, PJ Walker is going to start this week, I believe, and maybe for several weeks with Baker Mayfield out. And I know, I know, Walker's a little on the erratic side, but honestly, can he be worse than Baker's been?
Probably, actually.
Really?
Because I think PJ Walker has held several beers. He held Cam Newton's beer at being worse. I believe he held Sam Darnold's beer at being worse. Now, this was under Matt Rhule, someone who may not know how to utilize PJ Walker's skill set, but it did seem like beers were being held and possibly consumed.
Oh, my God. Are they going to call Cam Newton?
They might. I mean, call him up.
Yeah.
Get him down here.
Third go round. It can't fail this time.
Where's Cam at?
Yeah. This time it counts.
This time it always counts. And this time it's going to count on waivers because we have finally found the white whale worth unloading all your fab on. Denny, Kenneth Walker.
Yeah.
He's the new every down. Maybe not every down. He's the new lead back in Seattle. Seattle seems to have been kind of limiting the pass catching role the past 2 weeks, going to more of a two-man backfield. He immediately scored a 69-yard touchdown after Rashad Penny, who is now out for the season, went down against the New Orleans Saints. I mean, Ken Walker, he's like a first ballot, hashtag not in my league.
Right.
We know that he's rostered. So he's rostered in 45% of Yahoo leagues. We know he's rostered in every single one of your experts leagues and has been, you know, since he was still in college. Like, we get that. We understand that. We're sympathetic to that.
I mean, there are people screaming at this podcast right now saying, I spent a sixth round pick on Ken Walker.
Yeah, someone just they unsubscribed the podcast, but you really shouldn't do that. That hurts us bad.
No, please.
Don't do that. Don't hit us where it hurts. In fact, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen. But yeah, I mean, this is like in a year, thankfully, that I feel like have been lacking. I kind of like emptied the clip guys, lacking because there hasn't been that many game-changing injuries. Right. Is Ken Walker an empty the clip for the 55% of leagues where he remains unrostered?
Yeah, I think so. You know, he's going to be the cover guy for my waiver wire article tomorrow on NBCSportsEdge.com. He happens to be good. And I think that that's a thing that will help him not only become, you know, the lead early down back for Seattle, but I think that he could see a fair amount of passing down work as well. As a kind of preview of the piece, Walker, since week two, has been targeted on 7 of his 14 pass routes in the Seahawks.
That's crazy. For a guy who only caught 13 passes his final year at Michigan State, that's what you want to hear.
And so, you know, when you're looking at running backs, pass catching prowess, one of the things you want to look at, are they commanding targets or are they just running empty routes? Now, Rashad Penny was running a lot of empty routes, nothing coming his way. He was out there running, splitting with DJ Dallas because Travis Homer is, of course, on IR. I think he'll be back in week 7 or 8. We'll see. But I think Walker's passing down work could be surprisingly large here. And, you know, getting back to Walker just being good at the game, he entered
good at the game.
That's right. He entered week 5. With a 3.6 yards per carry, yards after contact per carry. That's a rate in line with guys you may have heard of, named DeAndre Swift, Christian McCaffrey, Ramondre Stevenson. He was top 10 in elusive rating on Pro Football Focus entering the week. And I think, you know, he kind of showed off on that long touchdown against the Saints, two quick cuts and he's gone. I think he has that kind of potential where he's not the kind of back who's going to have to get 20 carries and kind of grind out a 100-yard game. Like, he could just pop off just like Rashad Penny, honestly.
So DJ Dallas played a little bit yesterday. Was DJ Dallas playing before Rashad Penny got hurt? I can't really tell. It seemed like Seattle at some point was like a three-man nightmare backfield. Then they committed more to being a two-man backfield. Now it's been thrust into chaos with Rashad Penny out, but should we be worried at all that just like the snap share is not going to be as big as we hope?
Yeah, I mean there is potential there. DJ Dallas ran 8 routes on 30 dropbacks for the Seahawks. Ken Walker ran 14 routes on those 30 dropbacks.
That's actually very, very, very good news.
Yeah, I thought it was. I think that it's a little presumptuous to say. And I've seen this a little bit in the analysis of, you know, what you should do with Ken Walker on the if he's on your waiver wire, saying that, like, you know, DJ Dallas is the unquestioned 2-minute drill back. He is unquestioned pass route running back. I don't buy that entirely. And yeah, as far as like emptying the clip and like really being aggressive on Walker, I think this is the time. And what I mean by that is, if you have a free agent budget, don't get cute. You know, this is not the player to get cute on. Don't say, oh, well, I'm not going to go 80%. I'm going to go 70% or 75%. You go get crazy is what I'm saying. Because honestly, with free agent budgets, sometimes you got to get a little nuts. Okay. This is the time to do it.
You do. And you have to do it early because the fantasy regular season's getting close to half over. Bye weeks finally start this week. There's 4 teams on bye. The Seahawks bye is not until week 11. And just as like, as you wait and wait and wait for the, there's never gonna be like the truly perfect player on waivers. Every once in a while, there's like a clear plug and play, like RB1 type, but those guys usually have some standalone value and already rostered. Like
right.
Alexander Mattison's not really walking through that door on waivers. So it's always gonna be someone that kind of has question marks. But like, as you wait for like the theoretical perfect back to emerge, like your season's going out the door basically. And like, if you've waited this long, you've already kind of waited a long time. Like it's like exactly like you said, just don't get cute. Don't overthink it. The perfect player is not going to emerge, but Ken Walker's about as close to perfect as you're going to get, I think.
And this is a lesson, you know, for those who didn't roster Ken Walker because they didn't want to take a bench spot or something. Like, these contingency backs are so valuable once they get into the starting role. A guy who jumps out, you know, in that regard is Rashad White right now. Rashad White would be tremendous. Would be a top 12 fantasy option week in and week out. He needs to be rostered in way more leagues.
He does need to be rostered in way more leagues. And I'm sorry for the more hardcore players in our audience, which is a lot of you. I'm sorry you had to sit there and just listen to us talk about someone that, again, you drafted in your Devy League. Is that what they call those things?
Yeah.
You drafted in your Devy League. You know, back when like Barack Obama was still president.
Politics, come on.
We're sorry that he's been rostered for so long. And, you know, one reason, Denny, that Ken Walker is a must add in the 55% of leagues where he remains unrostered is it's an elite Seahawks offense. Just being led by the best player in the NFL, Geno Smith. Denny, Geno Smith leads the league in completion percentage over expected. He's the highest Pro Football Focus grade so far. As Ian Harditz, our former colleague, points out, he has 10 touchdowns, which is 4 more than the entire Broncos team.
Oof.
You may remember a few weeks ago, I was talking about how I was tired of Seahawks fans claiming to me that Geno Smith was good. And then he went out and not only continued to play well, but upped his game and has been genuinely elite the past 2 weeks. Is this – I have a few stats I'm going to bring up, but is this possibly for real?
I think it's for real in the sense that Geno Smith is not probably not going to finish as a top 5 fantasy option, which he is right now.
Spoiler.
But I think that QB1 in a 12-team league is certainly in the range of outcomes. And it's because this Seahawks offense is operating in a completely different way than we've become accustomed to during the Pete Carroll era. They're passing a lot on first down. They're even passing on second down and long, which is not something they've done.
No.
They are 10th. They have the 10th highest pass rate over expected. Like I just said, with the Panthers, the Seahawks are trying to set up Geno Smith and that offense for success, and it has worked. And Geno Smith has force fed his main weapons, Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. And I don't see any reason why that won't continue.
All it took for Pete Carroll to finally modernize his offense was true spite and hate.
Yeah.
He, like seemingly everyone else who either played or coached with Russell Wilson, doesn't seem to be a huge fan of the guy. Right. And Pete Carroll, you know, he's over 70. He's not really the kind of person who would normally go to therapy. Rather than going to therapy, he's just opening up his offense with Geno Smith after he wouldn't do it with Russell Wilson. And he's arrived in the 2022 NFL. Does this seem like a fair assessment, Denny?
That sounds right to me. It is the maybe the greatest troll job I've ever seen in pro sports, where they're like, okay, now that you're gone, Russ, we're going to open up this offense. I will say that, you know, something that you couldn't measure with the analytics coming into the season was Geno's determination and his being on a mission from God to prove that he belongs in the NFL as a starter. and has been relegated to backup status for many years now. I know that he struggled in a terrible, terrible environment in with the Jets. But I you got to feel good for him. I do.
Like our friends, Jake and Elwood, he's on a mission from God. Look it up, Zoomers. Even Denny might have to look that one up.
No, I know. I Blues Brothers.
He's Blues Brothers. I will say with Gino, to cite a very boomer stat and kind of though, like a less boomer context, I just have anecdotally noticed like that Gino just like lights it up in the first half. Like lights it, like frequently is having like 200 yards in the first half. And then coming out after the break, and it's not moving the offense nearly as effectively. And like this is happening like as they're giving away games. They gave away the game in New Orleans yesterday. Like the most boomer of all stats is quarterback rating, Denny, but it's 131.7 in the first half for Geno Smith, and then 88.5 after the second half. Now, again, a very boomer stat, but I think the reason for that is Geno, like, when the Seahawks can be like free flowing, like when the game's not on his shoulders yet, is like really dialed in. Mm-hmm. Then maybe like the more more predictable passing situations in the second half, where the game is kind of always put on the quarterback's shoulders.
Right.
Then we're kind of seeing backup Geno Smith emerge. And I'm just wondering if maybe that's like the sign that this still isn't sustainable. Like it's still a really, really good backup quarterback, but I have not been able to help but notice that, like, when it's like predictable passing time, Geno kind of goes back to the Geno we've known for almost a decade in the NFL.
That's a that's a good point. It is boomer stat, but it reflects struggles that the Seahawks are having in the second half of games, and I think that makes sense. I also think that from a fantasy standpoint, the fact that the Seattle defense cannot stop anybody on the ground or through the air.
Yeah. I was going to say anywhere. Yeah.
Is right. You know,
in the kicking game.
Yeah. I mean, they're basically not there, is good. I think that it means that the Seahawks are going to have to keep their foot on the proverbial, pedal and keep going. And that means that Geno Smith is going to make his fair share of mistakes. And honestly, I mean, I don't care if the Seahawks are good or not, but we
prefer if they're not. I mean,
I just want him to keep throwing. And I think that he will. I think that he's in a situation where they have no other option.
They have no. And this, the other way to properly contextualize Geno and why even I, like apparently the consummate Geno hater, has to admit he might remain a QB1, is that it's just a horrible position this year. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible. I mean, Jared Goff is still, we played five games, almost a third of the entire season, and Jared Goff is still ranking as a QB1 by average fantasy points. I mean, Tua Tagovailoa is, Derek Carr is. Like, it's just not – some years, there's not six or seven dual threats lighting it up this year. There's not six or seven, like, 4,500-yard passers lighting it up this year. Quarterbacks is kind of in transition right now, and it's just not a very good position. And Geno could – because, you know, doing part to the struggles – of the aforementioned Russell Wilson, who
you're starting Geno over Russ.
Oh yeah, easily. No, I'm saying like even I, who like am just going to truth Geno to the bitter end, I have to admit that he might remain a QB1 for a while just because of how bad this position is right now.
Can I read some names of other quarterbacks and whether you would start Geno over them on a given week? All right.
On a given week, okay, yes.
All right, Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, because I've tweeted this. I can't tell anything about the Jags. Like, is Trevor Lawrence progressing? Who's the starting running back? Is Christian Kirk overpaid? I still feel like I know nothing about this team.
Okay. So, Geno over Trevor. Okay.
Yeah.
Geno over Stafford?
Yes, actually, which makes me cry, but yes.
Yes. Geno over Jared Goff?
No, I mean, if weeks were like Jared is facing like Bill Belichick, like talk about an easy fade.
That was the easiest.
Bill Belichick's going to, speaking of scrambled eggs, Bill Belichick's going to turn this guy's brain into scrambled eggs here. Like he's going to be so confused. so confused. He has no idea like what sport he's even playing.
And last one. And I think I know your answer, but I'm torn. Geno or Aaron Rodgers?
Ooh, probably Aaron Rodgers, just because I feel like they have like almost the same floor right now, but oh man, that was a tough one.
It is tough. I think Geno in a good matchup over Rodgers in a media matchup, I think that I'd go.
Yeah, I actually think that is fair. And I'm beginning to question, I thought Rodgers had already like fully reestablished his floor and then like the ceiling was going to follow.
Yeah.
Obviously questioning that after the past two games.
Yes.
And maybe the Rodgers ceiling just doesn't exist this year. And maybe that Rodgers efficiency just isn't enough this year. And man, what a crazy year.
Yes, it is wild.
And one reason it's such a crazy year is, you know, early in the show, we talked about the Matt Rule honor code, where if the other team scores 17 points, you just give up. You don't try to. If you can't win fewer than 20 points, you just give up. The Los Angeles Rams are abiding by that.
Yes.
Denny, the Carolina Panthers have one of the most poorly organized offenses I've ever seen in my life. Just like no coherent approach whatsoever. They have 13 more points than the Los Angeles Rams. The Rams have 80 points through five games. Matthew Stafford has produced more than one touchdown one time. He leads the league in sacks taken. He leads the league in interceptions. He's climbing up the lost fumbles leaderboard. Obviously not all his fault. The protection is just so bad. But is there any light at the end of it? I mean, I feel like the Rams at this point boil down to Sean McVay's a genius. He'll figure something out. And like, there's like a non-0% chance of having, but it's just not like a real plan.
Well,
and is there light at the end of the tunnel for the Rams offense?
No, there's not. No, it's it's Cooper Kupp, it's Tyler Higbee, and that's it. That's the list. Okay.
Is Ben Skowronek getting on the list?
I don't know. I mean, I am going to write up Ben Skowronek for my waiver fee.
Of course.
Because, I mean, he's running a lot of routes, and he is clearly ahead of Allen Robinson in the pecking order there in the past game. Stafford is not usable even in 14-team leagues. Cam Akers, not usable. Darrell Henderson, not usable. It's really, really ugly. And I think it mostly boils down to the fact that their offensive line cannot stop anybody. And I'm talking about anybody, like even teams, you know, forget it, the Cowboys ate them alive and that was predictable. Okay. Any team with a halfway decent pass rush is going to get to Stafford. Stafford eventually will miss time and that will doom this offense, including Cooper Kupp. Stafford several times in the second half took a long time to peel himself off the turf. Was shaking his hand at one point, was holding his wrist. His shoulder seemed to be hurting at some point. You know, Joe, so he's taking hit after hit after hit. What's their backup's name? Wolford. He's basically like a, like an XFL.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. He's a roster filler. He's there because they couldn't afford to pay a real backup.
Exactly. So what you've been saying for, I don't know, all 5 or 6 weeks now of the season of this team is being exposed for its team building process, which has been stars and scrubs. Well, when your stars can't produce and you have to turn to your scrubs, it doesn't work. This model no longer works. The Wall Street Journal had a piece today saying what you've been saying, honestly, that this approach by the Rams, by Les Snead, it worked. It got them their Super Bowl and now it's over.
Yeah, they stayed one step ahead of the law for so long. But again, the stat I came back to, 13 top 100 picks since 2016, where like the baseline for that is 21-22. And just for you, they haven't made a first round pick since 2016.
Jeez.
Like there's just no depth. The depth is gone. And like you can't afford, you have no margin for error when that happens. None. And all the margin, like they've had to call upon that margin for error this year. And it has not been there. And there's no plausible backup plan. Like everything kind of just requires magical thinking. Like Sean McVay is a genius. He'll figure out something crazy, or Cam Akers Achilles will finally like kick into gear and he'll be like more like the Cam Akers we saw pre-injury, or Odell Beckham, who's coming off as yet another torn ACL, will sign.
Right.
And like revive the offense, or suddenly Matthew Stafford and Allen Robinson will get, like all of that is just basically magical thinking. And I just don't know like what the plausible counterpunch could be for the maybe Kyren Williams, who's on injured reserve and can't remember when he's coming back. Maybe he'll have something that can change up the mojo in the offense, but
yeah,
it just seems like there's no door for them to open that's going to have an answer.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe Kyren Williams, and he's a good deep deep league ad, by the way, because Cam Akers, it's not happening.
No.
13 carries yesterday for, I believe, 33 yards. He missed two wide open running lanes where the broadcast actually pointed out, like, hey, I don't know what Akers is looking at, but he could have broken a long run there. And instead he ran headlong into about a group of seven other players. So I don't really know what's going on with Akers. He's not a fantasy option though.
No. And Matthew Stafford is just not, I mean, not this is like breaking news to people, but I can't see Matthew Stafford getting back in the top. I mean, bye weeks are starting. So maybe it's a good matchup and there's four teams on bye, right. But I don't see Matthew Stafford being in my top 12 anytime soon at all.
No, how can you? Yeah, I mean, I think it was clear a few weeks ago, like, you could do way better on the waiver wire if you drafted Stafford thinking that he could do what he did last year, which is pile up yards. And a pocket passer like him, he has to pile up yards in order to be viable for in 12-team formats.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Want the same expert advice you get from the pros in the store while shopping online at DiscountTire.com? Meet Treadwell, your personal online tire guide that matches you with the perfect tire for your vehicle. Get your best match in 1 minute or less with Treadwell by Discount Tire. Let's get you taken care of.
So we talked about some stars. I'm not going to call this guy a scrub. I was going to stick with the stars and scrubs theme. But Arizona Cardinals, James Conner, as he always is day to day. Darrell Williams has a knee injury. It looks like there's a chance, Denny, that Eno Benjamin could be a plug-and-play RB2 for week six against the Seattle Football Seahawks. So I believe are allowing the fifth most running back fantasy points. They're just getting smashed in every aspect of the game. Like we said, Ken Walker is the lead this week, but is Eno Benjamin priority number two on the running back waiver wire?
I think so. I feel like it's a this time it counts situation with Eno Benjamin. Oh, yeah.
It usually is with these waiver wire running backs. It's going to be different this time, folks.
But okay, look, just like with Ramondre Stevenson, if every other running back is hurt, then Eno Benjamin is going to get a big workload. You better believe it.
He's going to eat.
Darrell Williams' injury is huge, obviously, here. Cliff Kingsbury said, what are you talking about? James Conner's fine after the game. Which
sort of I also said we are being very cautious, and a guy who already had injured ribs last year, James Conner was already playing with a flak jacket yesterday because of the rib injury he suffered last year. So I'm not sure this guy is gonna be like, it's like, yeah, you know what, coach, just fell down the stairs. maybe in my ribs a week or two.
I feel you, James.
The problem is at waiver time, we're not going to know James Conner's week six status. That is a problem for waivers. And you were about to, I think, make a point about that.
Well, Benjamin, when James Conner left, I believe week one or maybe week two, Benjamin was like the workhorse. And then when James Conner missed a game, then he split the workload with Darrell Williams. And Darrell Williams actually ran as the primary guy. But against the Eagles yesterday.
Philly Eagles, who they should have sent to overtime, but it's Cliff Kingsbury, and so they didn't.
That poor kicker, man. Jeez.
Oof. But not to get you too far off track, but I mentioned this in the podcast with Pat. When he was coming in to kick the game-winning kick or the game-tying kick, they showed a montage of him shanking it to the right in pregame warmups.
I saw it, yeah.
And then he horribly, horribly shanked it to the right.
He seemed, it reminded me of a golf swing where you're just desperately trying not to slice it. Yeah. And it's but it's the only thing you can do at that
point. It was quite literally the only possible outcome, Manny.
Oh, by the way, okay, we're going to get even further afield here. The sub kicker for the Eagles, his last name is Dicker. He was asked about the NFL in general, what it's like to play with it. He goes, I'm not into football. I don't know. Like, I don't watch the NFL. Yeah. Obviously I don't watch the NFL. I'm a soccer fan. If you want me to talk to you about English soccer clubs, I can do that. But I don't know anything about the NFL.
That guy's going to be good then.
It was something. I was like, oh, this is such a breath of fresh air.
He truly doesn't care. He's not going to feel any pressure.
Yeah, they asked him what it was like to play with Nick Folk because they're from the same county or something. And he was like, I don't know Nick Folk. No, wow. Never heard of him. Anyway, all right, back to Eno Benjamin. Real quick here. Yesterday against the Eagles, he ran 25 routes, was targeted 4 times. He saw 8 carries all in the second half. So, yeah, I think that, you know, he is like a fantastic plug and play in a Cardinals offense that is slowly getting better.
So, like, you know, I will say too, we haven't really gotten a meaningful update on Cliff Kingsbury. Did have his Monday press conference by the time we've done this podcast. We didn't really have a meaningful update for either James Conner or Darrell Williams. So just you're going to be operating with limited information probably when you put in waiver claims on Eno Benjamin. So he's a guy where you can hedge. And if you get him, you might have a plug and play RB2. Do not hedge on Ken Walker. You can hedge on Eno Benjamin. Unless by tomorrow we hear James Conner's not playing. Then I feel like you can get a little friskier.
I feel like we won't know that until probably Friday. Yeah.
Probably not. Denny, in a backfield where you don't have to make a move because both these guys are way over 50% rostered, is Travis Etienne putting the move on J-Rob in Jacksonville? James Robinson decisively outsnapped him in weeks 2 and 3. But as things have gone really haywire for the Jaguars, it's been like a narrow snap advantage, but Travis Etienne has outsnapped James Robinson over the past 2 weeks. Are we seeing maybe the changing of the guard here? I saw some people tweeting yesterday like Travis Etienne's like not good, lol.
Yeah, I don't know. So, I don't know what's up.
Maybe he's not even good. I don't know. But what's going on here in the Jags backfield?
I actually think he is. He is probably really good. Look, Etienne has taken over the obvious passing down role, like in 2-minute drills, and then when the team's chasing points in the second half. Like, Etienne is the only guy on the field at that point. And that's a significant shift from what we saw in the, you know, opening 2 or 3 weeks of the season.
Where John Shipley came on our podcast and said it would be James Robinson. And we were like, damn. And then he was right.
I think they tried it with him. And on a larger point, I do think that Robinson and Cam Akers are, you know, clearly, like, is not over their Achilles situations, no. Right? No. And I think that we just really need to be careful with saying like, oh, this guy is clearly back. This running back is clearly back from this horrific injury, which is usually career altering or career ending. In many, you know, it used to be at least. But yeah, Robinson, I don't think that he's going to be able to hold on to this gig for much longer. And it, going forward, if you said to me, who would you rather have for the rest of the season? I'm picking Etienne. No hesitation.
I think I agree with that too. And I don't know. The James Conner stuff was kind of weird because he looked really unexplosive some weeks, but then some weeks like the rate stats were really good.
Yeah.
But this just makes too much sense, kind of like not to believe in it, I feel like. And I think we're seeing the Jaguars are not as good of a team as they might have appeared in weeks 1 through 3. And there might be a lot of 2-minute mode and a lot of like comeback mode, a lot of like passing down back mode. And like you said, Travis Etienne has taken the lead there.
Yeah, you're right. I think you are right about a lot of negative game script coming their way, which is, of course, terrible for Trevor Lawrence because he really does not operate well in that environment.
No.
But the rest of season strength of schedule, the Jags have the 10th toughest schedule. So it could be
Get ugly. Even in that division? Man, what's going on in that division?
Is that division ever going to be good?
Ever remotely normal?
Yeah. Why are they always so bad?
don't know.
You would think that accidentally one year it would be like, oh, the AFC South's for real, just by pure coincidence.
But they're never like normal bad. They're always bad. But it's like, wow, I don't really understand why the Texans beat the Bills this week. But I guess. Remember the Jaguars beat the Bills last year with Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer has beaten the Josh Allen-led Bills.
Oh, that was such a gross game.
No,
oh,
history, God. Too. What a stain on history that Urban Meyer has beaten Josh Allen. Yeah. But it happened. What has also happened, Denny, is Rondale Moore returned to the slot. Yeah. The Arizona Cardinals on Sunday finally welcomed himself to the season. I believe 7 catches for 68 yards. Seemed like what we wanted to see. I will say, so did we see what we want to see? And are we forgetting that DeAndre Hopkins is back from suspension in week 7? And how might that change the dynamic with Marquise Brown and Rondale Moore? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think that DeAndre Hopkins coming back is going to be like, you know, a disaster for Rondale Moore's fantasy usefulness. Moore ran 83% of his routes from the slot this week, which was a great relief after he mostly operated as an outside receiver, as a 5'6" outside receiver, which is, it's something. You got to hand it to Cliff.
Yeah, you got to hand it to him. But
Greg Dortch's season is over. I declare it over. He only ran 2 routes. You know what, though? I'm not sad. I'm happy that we got it.
It's true.
You know, I'm happy that we experienced Dortch's season.
He was this year's Dan Arnold. Don't be sad it's over. Be happy it happened.
There you go. And I'm good with that. So Greg Dortch, thank you for the memories. It was fun. But Rondale Moore is back. 7 catches on 8 targets. Almost came up with a touchdown against the Eagles. You know, DeAndre Hopkins comes back. He's going to occupy probably, you know, the outside. Rondale Moore slides into the slot. Now this is rational coaching, so that might not happen that way. But I think that it's looking, things are looking up at least a little bit for this Cardinals offense with Hopkins returning, with Moore being utilized in a, you know, more reasonable, sensible way, with Marquise Brown really emerging as a viable downfield threat for Kyler Murray. I think that this offense is interesting going forward.
So Rondale Moore is only 18% rostered on our friends at Yahoo service. Is DeAndre going to be bad for Marquise Brown? Because I'm not someone who's seeing like prodigious, reliable volume.
Yeah.
People forget that DeAndre Hopkins wasn't really that good last year.
No.
And I can't decide how worried to be about it, but
he wasn't seeing a ton of targets either. I mean, his target per route run rate was way down last year compared to 2020. So I think that is something to watch. I don't think Marquise Brown is like this like borderline wide receiver one option that he's become. I don't think that he can retain that when Hopkins comes back. But, you know, you didn't draft him that way, so it'll be okay.
Hopkins, by the way, 86% rostered, so you're not going to really be pulling any October surprises with DeAndre Hopkins on the way. DeAndre, we'll see, man.
I mean, he's definitely
also coming off a steroid suspension, it must be noted.
Right. Definitely a part of his career where you gotta wonder if he's reached reached the end of the line, you know, the AJ Green zone.
And you know, hopefully the horse tranquilizers aren't detectable.
We're hoping, yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry to make a steroid joke. He's probably clean now. But AJ Green, by the way, kept both feet in bounds on a catch yesterday. It was a big moment.
For the first time since 2016.
It was 2016 was the stat I found. Yeah.
It was actually like almost disconcerting to see AJ Green make a play.
I know. I don't understand it too. Someone who was a Hall of Famer seriously just became categorically unable to keep both feet in bounds. It was really weird. It was almost like it was mental, like a catcher who couldn't throw the ball to second base.
I mean, I have not seen him make a positive play. It's like Andy Isabella. Nothing good has ever happened when you throw it to Andy Isabella. Nothing good has happened to AJ Green when you throw it to AJ Green since, like, honestly, since like 2019.
No, man, nothing good ever happens after Isabella O'Clock, by the way. Wow, did we get hoodwinked on that one?
Isabella was signed by Baltimore today, by the way.
Oh, man, wide receiver one there, I think, actually, just to be frank.
Let's not give up on him yet.
Yeah, Denny, I save this one to near the end of the show because it's a conversation no father ever wants to have. But it is Taysom Hill good this time. Does this time account with Taysom Hill? Or the tight end Taysom Hill, who conveniently never, ever, ever plays the position of tight end in real life.
Right. I mean, Taysom Hill is the single most maddening fantasy player of all time. I think that that's pretty clear here. Let me read you his fantasy output through the first 5 weeks of the season. So 15 points in week one, 1.4 in week two, 0 in week three, 8.1 in week four, and then 34.6 points in his explosion against the Seahawks. Now, he's averaging 10.9 yards per carry. Okay, that's more than double his career average. He's only seen, Mike Clay from ESPN tweeted today, that he's only seen one carry from inside the five. So the idea, which I've seen bandied about a little bit, the idea that he's the goal line hammer, is that's incorrect. He's not that's not the way they're using him. Maybe they will in the future, but they have not used him that way. So it's not, he has no floor. Okay. When you plug, if you plug him in as your tight end this coming week, it's likely you will have 0 to 3 points from him. Okay. You could also obviously get 10 to 15. I would say that Taysom Hill is interesting if you are scraping the bottom of the barrel on waiver wire tight ends. If you're considering someone like Mo Alley Cox or Taysom Hill, I'd probably lean Taysom Hill.
But so by standard fantasy scoring, by the way, Taysom Hill is the number one tight end in football, despite the fact that he's caught one pass all year.
Is that right?
It's right. He's the number one in terms of standard scoring. You mean,
for the season?
For the season.
No. Yes.
I'm dead serious. And
how can that be?
In PPR leagues where he's caught one pass, he's the tight end three by average points, behind only Travis Kelce and Mark Andrews. What? If you want to know how messed up this situation is. I know.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
Oh, his 54 God. Overall PPR points, 34.2 of which came in week five, highlighting that he has no floor. He does have a crazy ceiling, but he has just absolutely zero floor. So yeah, the league where the only way you score points, the scoring format where the only way you score points is by racking up cheap receptions. The number three overall player has one reception.
It's the game's broken, like, folks.
Yeah, it's almost like he's not a tight end.
Almost. I will say that I'm interested for as long as Jameis Winston is not in the picture, because they clearly are set on Andy Dalton not being like the focal point of their offense, and they're going to freewheel it with Taysom Hill for as long as Dalton is the quarterback.
Boy, do I need Jameis Winston back to start getting Chris Olave the ball. I will not ashamed to admit that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And also Taysom Hill is, you know, been a disaster for Alvin Kamara. And even in a high yardage game for Kamara in week five, you know, didn't get any touchdowns, didn't even get a look at a touchdown because of Taysom Hill.
Yeah, we'll see if that's also through that big game with a Seahawks mirage for Alvin Kamara, which might become a real fantasy phenomenon this year. Because the Rams are going to have two Seahawks mirages. We're going to ride for those games. Hey, it looks like the Rams figured it out.
Yeah, right.
Hey. Allen Robinson had 2 catches for 2 yards and 2 touchdowns. They figured it out on 10 targets, of course. But the Rams have figured it out. Denny, we're almost to the end of the show, but who's your favorite? I noticed you had a lot of like 0, 1, 2% rostered receivers written up this week. Who is your favorite deep cut receiver on the week 6 waiver wire?
Yeah. I mean, I think it has to be Darius Slayton, who is rostered in 0 percent of leagues.
Seems low.
It is. I was just looking at his usage stats. All right, here we go. So with the Giants just desperate at receiver, no Kenny Galladay, no Tony, no Wandale Robinson, and really Slayton's usage and role hinges on the availability of those guys. So keep that in mind. But Slayton was targeted on 7 of his 21 routes, which is really strong against the Packers. Was like, you know, by far and away the team's top target, Daniel Jones's top target, even though the team hates Slayton and has wanted to get rid of him for what seems like, you know, a year now.
Yeah. Not a fan.
They, for some reason, they cannot. But yeah, I think that he makes sense as a pickup. Kadarius Toney is struggling with at least two, possibly three hamstring injuries right now.
we're looking at, they're having their best people look into it.
So many hamstring injuries for Kadarius Toney. You got to imagine he's not close to playing. Wan'Dale Robinson is, he's practicing, but I feel like them holding him out is not a great sign for his knee injury. And there's nobody else. David Sills, who's really a practice squad type player. So Darius Slayton could just fall into a lot of target volume if this situation remains the same in week six.
So I'm not sure if the nod in my leaguers are going to be able to get you on Darius Slayton.
Please. Come on. Give us this one.
If you will be, I have Darius Slayton rostered in my dynasty league.
Oh, you're a sicko.
I actually finally dropped him this summer. Then I re-added him once I had a spot open up.
He was good him. Once upon a time.
I don't really understand why he just – I guess Daniel Jones is why. His game does not align with Daniel Jones. Danny, who is the kicker of the week? Is it a player that – might not be healthy. Who's the kicker of the week?
I'm glad you asked. Whoever kicks for the 49ers is in a great spot this week against the Falcons. Big favorites against the Falcons. They'll be in the dome. The Chargers are struggling with a kicker injury situation. Dustin Hopkins missed week five. Taylor Bertole.
Yeah, he's a French guy. I mean,
So if you can stomach that,
stomach having a French guy in your team.
Exactly. If you love America too much, I get it. But the Chargers are 6.5-point home favorites against Denver. Denver is giving up the sixth most field goal attempts on the season. But okay, here's one guy who definitely will be kicking this week and is a good play. Matt Prater, available in 82% of leagues. Get him. Arizona plays the Seahawks. Everybody kicks field goals. Everybody scores all the points against.
I will say, though, we don't know if Matt Prater will be healthy. Is he banged up too? He's also banged up.
I have three yeah. recommendations. Listen, guys, what we're doing here is we're doing team kicker, okay? Yes. So we want to monitor the kicking. I know this is what you wanted to do this week with your time. You want to monitor the kicking situation in Arizona and San Francisco and with the Chargers.
Because remember, Prater's banged up because his fill-in was the guy who kept horribly shanking the ball.
Eagles.
Matt, don't call me Danny. Amendola.
Man, that poor kid.
Real quick, I was going to end the show, but I saw, too, you have a 0% write-up at tight end and Eric Saubert.
Yeah.
The Denver Broncos, who I'm glad I didn't fall for the Albert O trick. That coaching staff does not like that guy.
No, not at all.
He's not playing. Yeah.
They're done with him. And Saubert, for as long as Greg Dulcich is not playing, and he could play this week, I suppose. I mean, he's had a 2.5-month hamstring injury now.
Seems long.
Yeah. But Saubert, ran a decent amount of routes, was targeted six times against the Colts. I mean, he's a floor play. Don't get me wrong, but you could do worse.
You could do a lot worse, and you could always do a lot worse than listening to the show. It was another really good show today with Denny and his waivers information. So please check out Denny's Waiver Wired column on the site. It should be live by the time you are listening to this. I mean, it might not. If you're a really early bird, it probably won't be live yet.
It'll be 10 a.m. Eastern time.
That's when the article goes live on Tuesday, Waiver Wired, ahead of your bids on Tuesday evening. Check it out. Continue to check the site for news, updates on things like James Conner. And if you can bid on Eno Benjamin in good conscience tomorrow.
There you go.
Thank you for listening. Keep listening. I'll be back on Tuesday with Mr. Kyle Dvorak, Lawrence Jackson. I'll be back later in the week with my rankings article. Denny will be back later in the week with, seems like, several articles still. Your Tuesday Q&A also. Check that out, 1 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, that's on NFL and NBC YouTube channel. The kids are watching it every Tuesday. We have a lot of fun. I actually really enjoy the chat in that one. So join us. Join us tomorrow, 1 o'clock.
Those are a lot of fun. I'm not doing one this year. And while sure, I like my time, I am kind of sad not to be doing it.
It's good for the ego.
It is really good for the ego. It's also just a lot of fun. So for Denny Carter, I'm Patrick Daugherty. Thank you for listening. We'll be back later this week.